Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Hello and good morning. This is Carl Nordgren. This is Exploring Your Creative Genius on WCHL 97.9 The Hill. And folks, I'm just so happy to be in their new studios, in our new studios. The radio station has a new studio, and it's so awesome. Boy, oh boy. These folks are investing in the community. They really do care about serving you, and I'm so proud to be associated with them. If you know the show, you know that I try to bring you multiple perspectives on what it means to be creative. Everything in the world is changing all the time. How a fixed understanding of creative can be of any use to us just is beyond me. I really believe that you need to have a situationally intelligent understanding of what it means to be creative, and that will be more easily accomplished if you have a big expansive understanding of what creativity can mean, and you can call upon the ideas as you need them. And so today we're going to do more of that, and I'm going to do that by sharing with you diverse views from a number of successful individuals in history who were creative and artistic folk. And I'm going to begin with a gentleman who's always sort of intrigued me. His pen name is Novalis, N-O-V-A-L-I-S. He's German. He was part of the German Romantic, the German Romantics. He died when he was 26, and that's one of the reasons why he's such an interesting character, historical character for me. And here's what he had to say. The world is a universal trope of the mind, a symbolic image of it. The world is a universal trope of the mind, a symbolic image of it. We don't see the world the way it is. We see the world the way we are. And so this symbolic image is our creation, our perspectives, our attitude tells us, shapes what we are going to see. It means we have to be intentional about overcoming the status quo. Because without our intentional overcoming of the status quo, we're always going to see the world, we're always going to see things, we're always going to see people, we're always going to see ideas the same way. And so it's really important that we take on new perspectives and new attitudes so that we can see things afresh. A lyric from a song, a little round planet in a big universe. Sometimes it looks blessed, sometimes it looks cursed. It depends on what you look at. Obviously, but even more, it depends on the way that you see. So you need to overcome the status quo, bring a fresh attitude so you can see things afresh. Here's a quote from Henri Matisse. I love looking at that name. I love saying that name. It's a beautiful name just all by itself. The arts have a development which comes not only from the individual, but also from a whole acquired force, the civilization which precedes us. One cannot do just anything. A talented artist cannot do whatever he pleases. If he only used his gifts, he would not exist. We are not the masters of what we produce. It is imposed upon us. We are reliant. Right? We're in a network of associations and a network of individuals, and we depend on that network. Newton said, if I've accomplished anything great, it's because I stand on the shoulders of giants. Right? So he was quite clear that his extraordinary creation was a result of commonwealth. I've talked about commonwealth in this show, right? Of the aggregation of resources and knowledge that each of us can pull from, each of us can withdraw from. Here's a great example of commonwealth. And Albert Einstein reinforces this idea of commonwealth when he says, 100 times every day I remind myself that my inner and my outer life depend on the labors of other men, living and dead, and that I must exert myself in order to give In the same measure, I have received and am still receiving from that commonwealth. That commonwealth is my addition to the end of his quote. It's important, right? I love the concept of commonwealth. I would like to think that we would begin to see public schools as commonwealth. So I am going to, as I move forward with my work, as we're approaching a new year and I think about how I'm going to refresh what I do, I'm going to be elevating the importance of love in my creative and entrepreneurial work. And here's Plato urging me on. Love is so divine a poet that he can kindle in the souls of others the poetic fire. For no matter what dull clay we seem to be before, we are every one of us a poet when we are in love. Love is so divine a poet that he can kindle in the souls of others the poetic fire. For no matter what dull clay we seemed to be before, we are every one of us a poet when we are in love. How about that? I just think that's so beautiful. That's so beautiful. Down the street from where I live, there's a neighbor who has a sign in his front yard. This isn't exactly what it says, but this is pretty close. The sign says, "I love you." The sign goes on to say, "You may be saying to yourself, how can you love me? You don't even know me." Well, the sign says, "We hate each other without knowing each other. Why can't we love each other without knowing each other?" And from this point forward, folks, I'm declaring here that I am going to be leading with that idea that I don't need to know who you are to love you. I'm just going to love you. I'm going to presume love. Another quote. We're going to have a little bit here about inspiration, right? That's a part of the creative process for sure. People want to be inspired. They want to have an understanding of inspiration. So here's a quote on inspiration from Khalil Gibran. "Inspiration is in seeing a part of the whole with the part of the whole that's in you." Inspiration is in seeing a part of the whole that I guess we want to create, the whole that we want to understand, from the part of the whole that is in you. Now, this is really leads to a little riff on our subconscious, right? Our subconscious is always working. It's always working as our creative subconscious, mashing up patterns, looking for relationships, finding new understandings from contrary ideas. So it's when our subconscious is looking for that additional piece, that new piece, and finds that and completes the pattern that we begin to understand that our subconscious has been serving us because that idea begins to emerge into our conscious thinking. So that's our first segment. Come on back from the break and we're going to have more voices sharing their thoughts about how you can grow your creative qualities. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. This is Carl Nordgren, 97.9 The Hill, Exploring Your Creative Genius. In the first segment, I shared some perspectives on creativity and the creative process from a number of individuals, and we're going to continue along that vein because I want to give you lots of perspectives on being creative so that you can create, construct, build the understanding of being creative and entrepreneurial and innovative that works best for you. Ralph Waldo Emerson had a lot of really good things to say about a lot of topics. Here's one on abandonment. "One thing which we seek with insatiable desire is to forget ourselves, to be surprised out of our propriety, to lose our eternal memory, and to do something without knowing how or why. In short, to draw a new circle. Nothing great was ever achieved without enthusiasm. The way to live a wonderful life is through abandonment. A man, says Oliver Cromwell, never rises so high as when he knows not whither he is going. I like that, to lose yourself. What activities do you engage in intentionally to lose yourself? Right? You're going to work on a big project or you need just a refresh. Where do you go? What do you do so you can lose yourself, so you can get out of your I, mine? What I do, a couple of activities that I do, I walk in the woods. That's almost certain that I'm going to lose myself on a walk in the woods with my dog, right? I become less me and more that which I am experiencing, that which I am enjoying, that which I am participating in nature when I'm out in the woods. That's almost a daily activity for me, up to a couple of hours in the morning. So it's the woods. The other place that I lose myself, boy, oh boy, I lose myself when I'm playing with children. It's just so wonderful to play with 4- and 5-year-olds. My show talks about how at 4 and 5, 98% of 4- and 5-year-olds perform on a creative assessment at NASA's creative genius level. 98% of the kids perform at that level. And so when I'm getting down on the floor or in the backyard playing with 4 and 5 and 6-year-olds, and I've done a lot of that. I've got grandchildren that age, but before that, for almost 20 years, my wife Marie had a preschool, a Waldorf-inspired preschool, where we would have a dozen or so kids that age playing in the backyard, and I just loved to go out there and just lose myself in their adventures, in their learning. Another place I lose myself is by watching great television. That's really different than these first two, isn't it? The woods and children. And I lose myself because if it's great television and the writing is awesome and the characters are well developed, then I take off. That's a platform for me. And now my own thoughts are happening and I'm gone from the moment. My wife has wondered time and again how I can watch the same show twice. And I can watch the same show twice, I tell her, because maybe I didn't really even see it the first time. So that's another place where I will lose myself, is in quality television or quality storytelling, I guess. The other part of Emerson's quote that we want to talk about is that nothing great was ever achieved without enthusiasm. How does that fit for you? I began an awful lot of marketing plans back in my 20s and 30s. A lot of business plans in my 30s and 40s with that quote on the title page, that nothing great was ever accomplished, is the way I would write it, is never achieved, was the way he said it, without enthusiasm. In my content, I talk to folks about how important it is to be enthusiastic in our pursuit of beauty, right? To be looking for beauty in our life. And when you find it, just behold it. Just be present to that beauty, right? Because it's going to be a wonderful refresh. And it's also going to inform your subconscious with shapes and colors and all those wonderful elements that make up beauty. Those elements become yours if you're enthusiastic in your pursuit of beauty. And when you are with it, you just behold it. You're just present to it. Enthusiasm is also important when you take on a new project, because failure is certain. Right? You're going to make mistakes. You're going to stumble and fall, and you might stumble and fall multiple times. And without enthusiasm, you might stumble and fall and stay down. But because you're enthusiastic and you know it's important to get this done, it's important to you, it's important to the world for you to get this wonderful project done, you've got such wonderful enthusiasm for what it's going to be, you get up and you try again. So that quote's got a few different perspectives for us to consider. Here's a quote next from Pablo Picasso. Picasso says, "Success is dangerous. One begins to copy oneself, and to copy oneself is more dangerous than to copy others. It leads to sterility." Interesting, right? Mark Knopfler, the musician, singer, songwriter, boy, he doesn't copy himself. If you listen to him back in the 70s when he was the front man for Dire Straits, Dire Straits. And if you listen to him now, oh my gosh, his music has just gone through extraordinary transitions. I've proposed that Mark Knopfler deserves to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for any 10 years of his career over the last, 40 years. And so what Picasso also says about the phenomena of copying oneself or copying, he says, bad artists borrow, but great artists steal. Bad artists borrow, great artists steal. When you borrow something, it's not yours, right? You're going to be careful. You're going to be careful with what you do with this thing if you're just borrowing it. Boy, if you steal it, it's yours. It's all yours. You can do whatever you want with it. You can take it apart. You can break it down into pieces. You can use some pieces and discard the others. I love that he has these two different perspectives on copying. Success is dangerous. One begins to copy oneself, and to copy oneself is more dangerous than to copy others. It leads to sterility. He also says bad artists borrow, or you could say bad artists copy, and great artists steal. Thank you, Mr. Picasso, for that wonderful insight. So, folks, we've got a break coming up. This is two of our three segments. I hope you come on back. We'll have a couple more voices for you, a couple of tips. And thanks for your listening.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming back. We have one more segment of Exploring Your Creative Genius. I mentioned in an earlier segment that I was going to revisit inspiration. And so here we do that now, once again revisiting Ralph Waldo Emerson. What is indispensable to inspiration? Wow, that's a good question, huh? What is indispensable to inspiration? Here's Ralph's response, answer to his own question. Two things: sound sleep and the provocation of a good book or a companion. So I honor health as the first muse. That's wonderful. I honor health as the first muse. There's two things needed, says Ralph Waldo Emerson, for inspiration: sound sleep and the provocation of a good book or a companion. Let's talk about inspiration a little bit here. What does inspiration mean? The word means to be informed by spirit. And in my early entrepreneurial and creative professional days, it happened more than once. It happened a half a dozen times that an idea came to me fully formed. I wasn't working on the pieces of the idea. All of a sudden, the idea was there. All of a sudden, the idea was there. And I thought, as the word inspiration suggests, that that idea came from outside of me because there didn't seem to be much going on within me that led to this idea. What we know now, of course, again, and I've mentioned this before, is that our subconscious is always working. It's engaged in pattern recognition. It mashes up. It relates. It finds relationships. It finds patterns between all the things that you know and all the things that you experience. And when you are, in fact, trying to solve a problem, it will become tuned to that, and it will look for the pieces that might mash up, might extend, might expand on what's going on already in the subconscious mind. We don't know what we know about what's going on in our subconscious until there's relevance to it, until there's relevance to its relationship building, and then it emerges to our conscious mind and it hits us all of a sudden. It feels like it's come from outside of us very often. Now, an interesting legal note on this, on inspiration: the Western intellectual property protection laws are very, very much oriented towards the individual versus the Muslim nation's intellectual property laws. In the Western intellectual property laws, the individual retains control over this intellectual property for a longer period of time. In Muslim countries, they believe in this idea of inspiration, that this breakthrough idea was in fact divinely inspired. It came to the individual from a divine source. And so in Muslim nations, the individual recipient of that gift does have some protection individually in intellectual property rights for a period of time, but it's much more limited compared to the Western nation. Sooner, much sooner than in the Western world, the individual's protections begin to dissolve and go away so that the community can benefit from this. Because after all, this was a divine gift. It just so happened that that individual was the recipient. But the divine gift, of course, must be shared. It must be shared. Now, when you take an intuitive leap, when your subconscious is working for you, something like what we've described here, and you've taken that intuitive leap, right, that leap of intuition to see this new thing, to see this new idea, to get this fresh insight. What I've learned, folks, is that you can't expect other people to follow you on that intuitive leap. You have to rationalize it for others. If you want others to embrace this idea that has come to you through your creative subconscious in what has felt like an inspirational moment of intuition, creative intuition, you've got to now rationalize that for others so that they can follow along with you. We've got one more here. This is from Martha Graham. And then I've got a tip for you when we finish with Ms. Graham. And you know who Martha Graham is, of course, the dancer, the choreographer, the leader in the dance world for decades and decades. And she says, "I am a dancer. I believe that we learn by practice. Whether it means to learn to dance by practicing dancing or to learn to live by practicing living, the principles are the same. In each, it is the performance of a dedicated, precise set of acts, physical or intellectual, from which come shape of achievement, a sense of one's being, a satisfaction of spirit. To practice means to perform in the face of all obstacles some act of vision, of faith, of desire. Practice is a means of inviting the perfection desired." Martha Graham. I love that. It's intention, right? Practice is intention. I talk a lot about, since we're born with wonderful creative qualities, all we have to do is be intentional and they will develop, they will grow, they will become more. And so that's what Ms. Graham is saying here, right? If you are intentional, working on the creative craft of your life, on the creative craft of your profession, when you're intentional, you're going to grow. So thank you so very, very much. Here's that quick tip. I told you before, I told you again. Stare at the color green. Stare at the color green for 20 to 30 seconds. Your creative performance improves by 25%. Stare at green and come on back. I've got more for you next week. Thank you very much.
This has been Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. You can listen to other episodes on chapelboro.com.